starting. Is there any other members who they will find us on the way? We had called this meeting to receive a presentation from USASA together with the Department of Public Enterprise. Of communications. My select committee on public enterprise and communication. So every time I mix all of you, because you are in one place, together with the Department of Communication, and for you to come and do the presentation and the briefing on the South African Connect project. We want you to give us a briefing in terms of how far is it. My name is Madiba Shitrake Baldwin. I'm the chair of the Select Committee on Public Enterprise and Communication. So I combine the two of you. I will allow honorable members to introduce themselves first, and then we'll come to the department and our staff. Yes.
Good morning, Chairperson, officials, and members. My name is Andrew Arnolds. I'm a member of the committee representing the Western Cape.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members, officials from the department, and members from the USASA. My name is Tebogo Modise. I'm the member of this committee. I'm representing Northwest in this committee.
I'm waiting for my friend to sit down and introduce himself.
I thought as much. I had to make a grand entrance. You know. Yeah. I popped out to make a grand entrance. Oh, well, my name is Mlindi Nana. I'm a member of this committee. I'm from the Eastern Cape.
And the chairperson is from Limpopo, so whenever you present anything from Limpopo, you must know. I'm looking at you. I'm looking at you. We'll allow the department and the delegation from USASA to do the introductions. Yeah.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, colleagues. My name is Tinye Kongobeni. I'm the Deputy Director General in the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services, responsible for ICT infrastructure.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members and colleagues. My name is Omega Shelembe. I am the Deputy DG responsible for SOE oversight at DTPS.
Morning, members. Morning, Chair. My name is Nancy Madlanga. I'm SOC Oversight, DTPS.
Good morning. Sorry, Chair. What does DTPS do? I'm sorry.
Yeah, abbreviation, what does it stand for? Just say.
Please, I don't like this. I don't know.
Apologies, Chair. After my colleague had said Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services, then we thought we can abbreviate.
Sure.
Welcome, Honorable Ngwenya. We are busy with the introduction. Thank you very much. Yeah, we can.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Rabele Sani Nechizivani. I'm from USASA.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, colleagues from the department. My name is Basil Ford, recently appointed as executive caretaker at USASA.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Silwane Mutlum. I'm the company secretary from USASA.
Good morning, Honourable Members and colleagues. My name is Mrs. Sanchin, we're from the ministry.
Good morning, Matanga Mulamba, Official for me.
Okay. We can go to... we must first allow Honourable Ngwenya, my House Chair, to introduce herself before we go to ourselves.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. My name is Winnie Ngwenya, House Chairperson of International Relations and a member of this committee. Thank you.
From Gauteng, Mawone.
Gauteng province.
Good morning, Honorable Members, Committee Members. My name is Dr. Charles Sinkala, Special Advisor in the Office of the House Chairperson for International Relations and Members' Interest.
Good morning, Honorable Members and Delegates from USASA and DTPS. My name is Loli Pumelele SBC. I'm the Committee Secretary. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Eric Boskadi. I'm the Colonial Advisor for the Committee.
Morning, everyone. I'm Solanus Melane, Researcher for the Committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Amanda Zindan. I'm the Committee Assistant.
Good morning, my name is Yoli Solando, Parliamentary Communication Service.
Thank you very much. I think everyone has introduced themselves. Except one.
Hello, I'm Cedil Mohammed. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. I'm doing a report on the meeting.
Okay. Yeah. Trina, we were fine with you not introducing yourself, but our visitors... our visitors had to know, but all these other people have introduced themselves except this one, so they might get surprised. No, thank you very much. The next item is apologies, Lodi. We have received the apologies from the Minister and Deputy Minister. All of them, I think, they're outside the country. They won't be with us here. But the delegation that they have sent... DDG is capable of answering all the questions that the committee members might have. They are outside the country. They have sent. They have sent the apologies we received.
Chair,
from the members, I think there are members that have sent the apologies. Yeah.
Chair, I wanted to check: is the minister still celebrating the wedding anniversary as well?
No. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that.
We received apologies from Honorable Arnold. Honorable Glute. I'm sorry, Mr. Arnold. Honorable Glute, Honorable Smith, Honorable Abu Skakne, Honorable BP.
Yeah. Oh, Honorable Magas.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. We have noted those apologies. Adoption of the agenda. We have got an agenda in front of us. From members, can we get Honorable Anos move and Honorable Mutisa seconds? Yeah, thank you very much. We'll give the department. I will hand over to the department. I can't go to your entity. I must start with you. You'll see how you sub-delegate to your entity in terms of the presentation. You will do the background. If you are to do the presentation, it's fine. If you are to sub-delegate, I have given you the opportunity to deal with the presentation. Yeah, thank you very much.
Once again, thank you very much, Chairperson. We welcome this opportunity to come and brief the Select Committee on the broadband program. As you indicated, we've got USASA here as one of the entities that's implementing the broadband program. So in terms of the presentation and approach, the department will provide the overview, and then USASA will also provide the progress in terms of the program that they have been implementing. Go to the next slide, please. So that's the agenda that we wish to follow for this presentation. So we'll elaborate on the South Africa Connect, which is the broadband policy, strategy and plan that was adopted by government in 2013. We'll also provide the update on the implementation of the program with respect to phase one and also the phase two. And then USASA will provide progress on the broadband connectivity infrastructure rollout. Go to the next. So in terms of the approach, how we are approaching the broadband, because broadband is quite intensive. It covers almost every part of the society, looking at government, business, and then citizens. So the different stakeholders responsible for this part of the society. We, from a government point of view, we are focused on government connectivity, the provision of connectivity to government institutions and facilities. And we are, in terms of that approach, we are using the aggregation of demand that government has, because each and every government facility requires some form of connectivity in order to improve its service delivery. That's a program that's being driven from the department point of view, and then also entities like ICASA, USASA, CETA, and Broadband Infraco and Centec also contribute to that program in terms of enhancing connectivity to government. Then the other aspect of broadband connectivity is focusing on providing connectivity to business to stimulate economic growth. The government, our role is to provide and bring a policy and legislative framework by having a policy that allows the regulator, for example, to license relevant players to roll out the infrastructure and also set obligations to ensure that the infrastructure is extended even to remote areas, and also how do we assist the stakeholders in the rollout of the infrastructure, and how to deal with some of the challenges that emerge as infrastructure is being rolled out, such as duplication of infrastructure. So largely that role is played by the private sector who get licensed by ICASA, the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa. And the issues of license of the spectrum also forms part of that, because then it helps to enhance the infrastructure for where it's mobile communication. If it's fixed, there's a need for waivers that the local authorities grant for the rollout and the digging of streets to expand on the fiber infrastructure. Then in terms of the citizen connectivity, it's largely also being provided by the private sector as part of their license conditions to ensure that we've got coverage. It's coverage in the form of fixed broadband connectivity that's largely provided by fiber and also fixed wireless technologies or infrastructure. And also from a wireless, a mobile point of view, Then we license spectrum to provide mobile broadband connectivity. Due to the historical development, most of the countries do not have the fixed infrastructure to connect households or individuals. So we rely mainly on mobile broadband connectivity. So that's how we approach this program of infrastructure. There's a program that's run by government, focused on government connectivity, and there's a program that's run largely by the private sector players to enhance connectivity to business and the citizens. So here we provide feedback to the committee with regard to the government connectivity program that's being driven by the department, and also USAS also in terms of its role, because USAS applies the role of also extend the government connectivity but also assist with the citizen connectivity in terms of their mandate. So with regard to the government connectivity program, what we did, we did an infrastructure gap analysis in 2013 to assess the state of infrastructure availability in the country. And then based on that infrastructure gap analysis, we're able to identify which areas required infrastructure. And in the main, most places, in particular the rural areas, do not have access to infrastructure, even including the townships. So we identified also the government facilities throughout the country. That looking the schools, the health facilities, could be the police, any other type of government facilities, so that there are locations that we can assess how far they are from the infrastructure. And based on that gap analysis, we discovered that there are about 42,000 government facilities that require connectivity. Some of them, they do have connectivity, but it's not in the broadband connectivity. Even those who have broadband connectivity, may not be the desired or the required speed. So based on that assessment, we're able to say we need to have a program that connect all those government facilities. And then in order to implement that with engagement with Treasure, because it's a huge program, about 42,000 sites, the program was then split into two phases. We had the phase one, which was more of a pilot phase, and then the phase two. So the phase one was supposed, I'll go into the details of that, it's supposed to cover 6,135 government facilities in 8 district municipalities. I'll go into different terms of which district municipalities are those. But in terms of that approach, we at that stage when we did an assessment, it was established that Western Cape province and also the Gauteng provincial government, they had broadband programs which they had started implementing. So because we are all focusing on connecting government and we didn't want to duplicate efforts as well, so we excluded the Western Cape and also Gauteng so that they are run from the provincial governments. So we also had the phase two. The phase two covered all the remaining districts, about 44 districts, in terms of connectivity that should be expanded to all the different government facilities. The other issue in terms of the approach, just to highlight, we established that most of the government facilities pertain to schools. About 25,000 of those of the 42, they are schools. And the principle was that if we were to work on a program that expands infrastructure to cover each and every school, by default we'll have extended infrastructure to cover each and every community or each and every village, because almost each and every village has got at least one school. So the approach is that if we expand that infrastructure from a government connectivity program, the private sector as well can leverage on that infrastructure connectivity. So the South Africa Connect policy prescribed targets that had to be met in terms of the population, the schools, the health facilities, also other government facilities, the speeds that had to be achieved at different stages. For example, we're supposed to be at 50% of 5 megabit per second, 2016 for the population, and then improve to 10 megabit per second for the population by 2030. And for the schools, we are supposed to improve to 50% at 10 megabit per second in 2016, and by 2030 to be at 1 gigabit per second, because it's, the targets were set in an evolutionary manner to anticipate the situation where in future most of the education will be provided through digital means, which then will require lots of speed. But we have to factor that as we do the planning currently, so that the infrastructure that's being laid out can be scaled. But also at the same time, we need to close the gaps that do exist there. So in terms of the phase one that we've got, we the 6,000, the breakdown of the facilities, so we looked at 8 district municipalities. We had Dr. Kenneth Kaunda in the Northwest. For phase one, we plan about 340 facilities. Kertsbanda in Mpumalanga, 797 facilities. Oar Tambo in Eastern Cape, 1,444. And then Pixikaseme in the Northern Cape, 225. Thabo Mofutsanyane in the Free State, 747. And Mgungundlovu in KZN, 771. Mzinyati in KZN, 601. And then Bembe in Limpopo, 1,210. So the other principle for the program as part of the phase one was to also support a national program. So we identified the national health insurance program, which was piloted in this district. So we went for those districts in terms of how we prioritized or how we chose this district to ensure that as the national health insurance program is being rolled out, because it requires connectivity, we do support that. But then the approach was that as we're not only focusing on providing connectivity to health facilities, we also want to provide connectivity to all the government facilities. But that has been the biggest challenge, that each and every facility will go to the service providers to request for connectivity. Because they go at different times, it's either it becomes costly for them, or the service provider says it's not viable for them to even roll out the infrastructure. So here, the approach was to aggregate the government demand, so that if there is a health facility, we also look at what other government facilities are nearby, so that they can also be connected, so to make it cheaper and also quicker to provide the connectivity. So that's the phase one program for the SA Connect. Yeah, we can go to the next slide. So here we will provide the in terms of the progress where we are now, due to limited funding out of the 6,135, the target for the end of this financial year is to connect 970 government facilities, and the approach for that program is being implemented by Broadband Infraco and also CETA. Broadband Infraco role is to provide the infrastructure, and in line with its license that it got from ICASA. And then CETA's role is to provide the services on top of that infrastructure to ensure that it is end-to-end service provisioning to the different facilities. So in terms of the progress to date, out of the 970, we have done 630. And then we're working hard to ensure that the remaining facilities are connected by the end of this financial year. We also provide a breakdown below in terms of those districts that I mentioned, in terms of how's the progress, and how the breakdown of that 630 that has been achieved so far. So that's where we are at the moment in terms of the SA Connect phase one implementation. And I think lastly, we will also want to provide progress on the phase two. So because the broadband infrastructure program is quite capital intensive, the fiscals is not able to fund the program in a sustainable manner. So we have submitted requests for funding to Treasury over the few years, and then it's been agreed with Treasury that we rather than look at other options for funding this program, not only rely on the fiscals, because the consumption of these services is not going to stop and it's going to continue and it's also going to increase even as the speed and new technologies are being rolled out. So we Treasury recommended that we conduct a feasibility study so that we can approach other funding providers and institutions to assist. So Treasury recommended that we work with the Development Bank of South Africa, DBSA, to conduct this feasibility study. We've been working with the DBSA, we've signed an MOU with them. We are at a stage where now they finalize the request for proposal for the service provider to conduct this feasibility study, which is going to be a national study. It's going to look at the different, each and every district, because the different places are also got challenges that are unique to them. So we have to look at what's the funding mechanism, what are the implementation mechanism for the different areas. Some do have infrastructure, some the sites are very much sparsely distributed. If you go, for example, if you look in the Northern Cape, the communities are much far apart. So you have to look at the technology that helps them to also benefit from the broadband connectivity, but it's also sustainable from a cost point of view. So the feasibility study will also help in terms of determining those and to develop bankable projects that we are able to ask for funding from the different stakeholders. So the intention is that by the end of the 2020 to 2021, we'll have the feasibility study so that we're able then to start to request for funding. So that's where we are. It was envisaged that it was going to be issued by end of last weekend, but we've got confirmation that this weekend the RFPs will be issued so that the service providers can come on board to assist with the feasibility study. So by the time the financial year starts, the service provider will be already on board and will be ready to start it. Thank you. I'll then ask USASA to proceed with the presentation to provide feedback in terms of the program that they are running. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DDG. I'm fairly new in this position. I was only appointed last week, so I'd like to ask my colleague Love to do the presentation on our behalf. Thank you.
Thank you once more. From USASA side, we will be presenting the broadband infrastructure program as well as the connectivity rollout. So the first slide sort of looks at the roadmap or the various models that have been used at USASA in an attempt to ensure universal access and service to ICTs. So the first one, and we'll run quickly through this so that we can get to the current model that is being used now. So the first model was the telecenter model, and the second one was the cyber labs, and we will go through each, we'll just have a summary of each model, what it was about, the challenges relating to each model. And the third one was the thin client model. Third one was the laptop trolley. And lastly was the tablet model. And from that, then we evolved to the current model that we'll dwell a bit more on. So with the telecenter model, the technology that was used there, it was VSAT. We had computers and printers. In terms of the challenges, I mean, the first thing was that we had sustainability issues and the fact that there was this dependency on USASA. And you'll see as we go through the rest of these models that there's always this sort of permanent dependency on USASA. The other issue that we experienced with that model was vandalism, burglary and theft, and obviously the high maintenance costs of the deployed end-user devices. The second model, that of Cyber Labs, so the difference with the previous one on this one is just that we made use of refurbished desktop computers, but in terms of the challenges that I highlighted in the previous model, it was basically the same, the sustainability part, the black burglary issues, and we were also using VSET with this model. The third module was the thin client model. After these came about as a way of trying to discourage theft and burglary. So you would have a separate server room, and as you can see in the picture, what you have there is only the monitors. But even with that, and we were also using VSET, but even with that, we dealt with a lot of issues, you know, in relation to theft, burglary. I mean, the monitors were being stolen, and obviously there was then a need as well to sort of revise this model to look at other viable models. And the fourth one was that of a laptop trolley model. So what this entailed, you had laptops in a trolley, and this trolley could be wheeled to any classroom. So you could have computer lessons in any classroom, so all that was needed was just to wheel the trolley to the particular classroom. That was over, this trolley would be taken back to the strong room. So obviously that was also, you know, devised to ensure that we deal with the issues of burglary, theft. The technology as well here, we were using VSET. The challenge is obviously VSET is slow. And obviously there were issues with the maintenance and upgrading of the laptops. And there were also issues with the dependency, as I mentioned, that the dependency sort of comes through in all these models. And finally, the tablet model. This was the last model before we rolled out the current model that we're using. And there was a slight, there was a change, a big change with this model in that we moved from VSET to Wi-Fi internet broadband. And we did this in Rato, we piloted this in Rato and Joe Muralong. Obviously because this model involved end user devices, obviously it was a bit expensive, and obviously very few schools could be connected. Obviously that was because there were budgetary constraints. Those were the five modules that were used before we got onto the current model. In terms of the current model, we're connecting schools, clinics, government facilities, and we also have public Wi-Fi hotspots. And the schools are connected using an antenna and a radio. Basically, what you get, say in a school, you'll get Wi-Fi in a specific area, say it's in a library, but you sort of extend that Wi-Fi to the whole school so that students are still able to access the services. As far as the challenges, obviously because now you're providing that Wi-Fi around the school, you'll get a lot of people gathering around the school. So even people that are not students, but you sort of get the whole community gathering outside the school. So obviously that presented a lot of, you know, security risks for the schools, and obviously it led to other challenges through that, because principals, in trying to disperse the crowds, those switch off the Wi-Fi, obviously which was not intended. And obviously schools are also prone to burglary. I think we have highlighted the issue of obviously because they are schools, these are schools, so when the lessons are over, principals tend to switch off the Wi-Fi, and obviously that affects that will affect the uptime. I think that's just a picture that shows you the kind of towers that we roll out and the kind of technology that we're using. So just a summary in terms of what the current the different stages of the current model. So firstly, that first block sort of talks more to the Act, the founding legislation for USASA. So basically, USASA provides incentives to service licensees to construct electronic communication infrastructure. So obviously, after the completion of that infrastructure, the infrastructure gets owned by the appointed service provider or the licensee. So after the completion of the infrastructure, the connectivity agreement then kicks in. So what USASA does, we support that connectivity for 24 months, and obviously that is purely for sort of budgetary reasons. Because obviously if you sort of connect perpetually, obviously you would not have funds to continue rolling out. So we connect for 24 months, obviously with the hope that after the 24 months, the either education or health in the particular areas will then be able to take over those services and make use of the services and ensure that they are sort of reaping the benefits of the connectivity. And just the last part, the biggest challenge for us is that the, say, health schools that have not been able to take over the connectivity because obviously they sort of present other challenges that they're dealing with. They've got their own priorities. So when the 24-month term is over and they need to take over, that's where you encounter challenges because they are unable to continue with the services. You do find, obviously, sporadic cases where they are able to take those, but those are they are minimal. The next slide sort of shows that DDG presented the targets for SA Connect, so we're sort of juxtaposing that with what we've been able to achieve so far as USASA. So you'll see that for phase one, we sort of list the targeted facilities for SA Connect, and we sort of also compare to what USASA has rolled out so far. You can see that USASA has done about 731 sites in all of those district municipalities, Hepzibande, OF Tambo, Pixlika, Seme, all of those until you get to Bembe, Joe Daulo. So those are just the numbers that we've been able to roll out over the years. And the table below there just shows you what the DDG has already presented in terms of the speeds that I expected, you know, in line with SA Connect, and we sort of show you what speeds USASA is able to provide. So basically, all the sites that USASA has rolled out, we've contracted all those sites at 10 megabits per second. So if you look at the 2016 SA Connect targets, you'll see that we were, in terms of what we've contracted, we were in line with SA Connect. So obviously, when you look at 2020, obviously there will be issues of checking if that infrastructure, and we, for some of them, we have already done that, the scalability of such infrastructure to make sure that we are still able to upgrade that from 10 megabits per second to whatever speeds that the infrastructure would allow us to go up to. But that just shows you what USASA has contracted and the fact that, you know, with the 2016 targets, we were well in line with SA Connect speed. The following slides, the past and current broadband rollouts, this just shows you the provinces and the municipality names, and it sort of shows you, it sort of breaks down also the different categories that we connect, the clinic, the schools, government facilities, public Wi-Fi hotspots. It just shows you the numbers that we've connected. Clinics, as you can see, we had 254, schools 413, government facilities 24, public Wi-Fi hotspots 40, and the total being the 731 that I presented earlier. I think the next slide just goes into the funds that were spent for the different sites. The budget, we also compare that to the actual amounts that were spent. I won't go deep into that unless there's going to be questions later, but that just shows the spending per municipality, and the contracted service provider or the service licensees. In terms of the challenges, we're sort of looking at the main challenges, those that have to do with the, you know, if we have issues with connectivity and inconsistencies, and also the main challenges in relation to the model itself. So the first one that I touched on was the issue of electricity and power supply. The fact that, and you can sort of link that with the second challenge, the adverse weather conditions. I'll just give an example of the Eastern Cape, where there can be severe weather conditions. Obviously that affects the connectivity, and it will affect the power issues, and the fact that I mentioned that because of the crowds that will hang around the schools, you'll get principals switching off connectivity, and in most of the sites you'll find that their school is a site that connects other schools, so if that is switched off, it sort of affects other facilities that are connecting to the main site. So those issues, they sort of affect the connectivity from time to time, but due to effective stakeholder engagement, we sort of are able to bring those to the attention of the affected sites, and we are able to resolve those. But those are just the challenges that we sometimes deal with. We just mentioned the issues with the road infrastructure and the terrain, that we do roll out the services in the underserviced areas. So obviously if there's any breakage, the access to these areas, those areas won't be as accessible as a place in Johannesburg, in Midrand. So those are just some of the issues that we deal with. But the main challenge with the model itself, what we're highlighting is the fact that obviously USASA, we mentioned the issue of dependency. So in terms of the ECA, USASA provides incentives to the licensees to construct, operate, and maintain those networks. The fact that those service providers own the network, so the sustainability thereof, it becomes a challenge to say after USASA has supported that, how do the relevant municipalities together with the service providers make sure that there is sustainability, they commercialize the infrastructure that we've provided. So that has been the challenge. In terms of the mitigation, we've been working very closely with the department, even ourselves, to come up with various solutions so that we can try and make this infrastructure or this service that we provide sustainable, so that we're able to commercialize them. That even when we do hand over, these continue to be used. So we are coming up with different modules, models to ensure that we commercialize and we make sure that there's sustainability. And that also talks to the last challenge that we're highlighting, the takeover of connectivity payment. The fact that different departments, like I keep mentioning, health, education, they've got different priorities. So that takeover of connectivity when USASA has supported for 24 months, it's one of those challenges that we're experiencing. But like I said, we are working on a model, on sort of different model. We're sort of looking at various options that we can apply to make sure that we are able to sustain this this service, this infrastructure, and these services. This last slide, we're just highlighting the connectivity for the first quarter and the second quarter. At the time when we prepared the presentation, we had not received. We were still trying to get the information for the third quarter, which we have received that information. So for quarter three, it's sitting at 80%, and that's purely because, during December the schools close. So obviously, you do expect less activity during the holiday season. So that was at 80%. But that just shows you the uptime in terms of connectivity, where we deployed the services. So we're sitting at 90%. And we're putting those, what is expected in terms of the annual performance plan is 70%, and purely because of the other challenges that I've mentioned, the fact that we are deploying in underserviced areas, there's various issues that we sort of took into account, the fact that there's switching off of connectivity, the fact that when schools are closed, obviously you will have less activities. So we sort of had to take that into account, and we put that the threshold at 70%, and we were sitting at 90%. We were sitting at 90% in quarter one, 90% in quarter two, quarter three, as I've explained, 80%. And that is the end of our presentation. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much. Unless from the DDG, is there anything to add?
Yeah, fine.
If you have covered, I will then hand over to honorable members to engage with the presentation. I start that further aside from honorable Ngwenya. Yeah. We'll come to other members if they have questions. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you for the presentation. Chair, let me start about the comment first. To say we welcome the comprehensive presentation from the officials of USASA, which amongst others reflect on the accessibility of broadband service to South Africa Africans across provinces. Firstly, Chair and foremost, Honourable Chairperson, it is important to mention that today's presentation was in line with the strategic objective of USASA, which is to provide universal service to the people of the country, especially those located in rural areas. Chair, I also have a concern in terms of the security of this project. Then, in terms of the question, Chair, on page 7 of the presentation, bullet number 1, the presenter mentioned that implementation is limited to 970 sites. The question is, should you get enough funding? How many sites are you prepared to do? That's one. Question number 2, is USASA monitoring phase 1 implementation of 970 sites that you said that the implementation is carried by broadband in Infraco and site? If yes, how are you conducting your monitoring of this implementation? And if no, why not? Then the third question, Chairperson, on the, page 5, the presenter spoke about a pilot project. So I wanted to know, Chair, that it is a pilot project. What is the time frame of the pilot project? Because, Chairperson, you'll find that other pilot project end up not understanding. Yeah, but at the beginning it was the pilot project. So hence I wanted to know how long is this pilot project going to end. Then on page 11 and page 12, Chairperson, I'm worried about the security. I hear the presenter is talking about the butler and all that, and they did mention the challenges also that they have. But if we don't have a strong security, all this project is going to be on the drain, especially at the schools, whereby after school there's no one in the school. If there's no security, how sure are you that all this computer, you'll get it in the morning? Hence I said I'm worried about the security, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Anna.
Hi, Chair.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought you were too late. I see you have to do all the stuff today. I said, I must keep on coming to you.
No, I'm ready, Chair.
Okay, fine.
Thanks, Chairman. Chair, firstly, I may have missed something in this meeting, but I would want to raise an observation. It could well be that our esteemed guests were not aware that they should bring along probably one or two board members. It always bothers me when we, as politicians, we only, you know, get to interact with bureaucrats, which is absolutely fine. But you know, from where I'm sitting, I think it's always, you know, somewhat proper. When we have this kind of, you know, engagements, we also get exposed to board members. I thought I needed to make
if they have.
I thought I needed to make that comment, Chair. Chair, if you go to slide 20, firstly, the presenters said in the Eastern Cape the project is piloted in OR Tambo. Now, if you go to slide 20, under Eastern Cape, it says Emalahleni. Emalahleni is not in OR Tambo. It's in Chris Anitich municipality. It's an issue that I think you guys, probably there could be a reason why Emalahleni is under OR Tambo in your presentation, but as far as I know, they're under Chris Anitich. In fact, they're non-existent. They got amalgamated with Queenstown municipality to form Enoch Mgijima municipality. So they're basically non-existent at this stage. Chair, the issue of crowds gathering around schools, I do accept the discomfort raised by the presenters in this regard, because it can cause a whole host of things. But I'm sure with their expertise and knowledge in this space, there could be ways and means to discourage such crowd gathering, even if it means you change your password and access codes on a regular basis, so that people can't get closer to the school parameters and are connected. So I would really want to bring that to the presenters and get to hear what they think about it. I mean, given today's technology, these things can be done remotely. You know, you change passwords on a regular basis, so as to prevent these crowds gathering around schools. But Chair, still talking about this connectivity to schools, and I don't want to put people in trouble here. I have two in-laws, both of them are school principals. I can bet my bottom pension both of them are computer illiterate. Every day they got given laptops, tablets, iPads, cell phones, smartphones. They're gathering dust in their houses. Now, I would want to check with USASA and the department. What is it that you guys are doing to mitigate this kind of a situation? It's basically like throwing money in a pitless, in a dark hole. You give people tools of trade, but unfortunately they can't use them. What are you guys doing to address this? The other issue, Chair, And please pardon me, I'll be a bit longer. I'm about to finish up. Yeah.
I've given you an...
Thank you very much. The other issue, Chair, that springs to mind, I am informed that USASA is presently fighting a number of lawsuits from service providers. And you are required to budget for these kind of events. In an event, you lose some or all of them. And it is my information that you haven't made any of those budgetary provisions. And the question is it confidence on your part that you have watertight cases, you will win the cases, or is it because you don't have sufficient money to budget for this? And lastly, Chair, I hate to always make reference to SAA, but unfortunately they are well known for all the bad things. Now, at some point at SAA, some of the board members were serving in no less than 21 boards across the country and internationally sometimes. And the biggest question that continued to arise, you serve in 21 boards and we have 30 days in a month. You have your own personal business or profession that you are running at the same time, which requires your time. Will you ever have sufficient time to apply your mind, concentrate, on the business of SAA, and results are for everybody to see what is currently obtaining at SAA. Now with USASA, I would want to check. Now this is your question, USASA. I would want to check how many each of your board members are serving in other boards, and how many of those board members, how many boards are they serving in, and which are those boards? It's a bit longish. Do you get it? Sure. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just listening to the presentation this morning, it's actually very distressful to sit here and listen to the presentation of the entity. And if you look now at what they have presented here for us, they didn't even come and give an update on the governance of the entity, which is the most important part. Because you're not going to solve or deal effectively with USASA if there's no stability in the entity as a whole. So that is the first thing that I want to mention here. And I don't know why they didn't present or raise those issues. Because this is where they must start. Then, the other thing that I want to raise here, I've looked now to the presentation of the past and current broadband rollout. There was a presentation there. I've taken a picture just to have it before me. And if you look at the stats and the performance of this entity, no, we can't go on like this now. They presented to us, I think it's from 2013, until date, there's only about, I can just mention it, if you look at clinics, for example, 254, schools, 413, government facilities, 24. I know schools is also government facilities, but I don't know why they mention facilities there, meaning other facilities. Then, So in terms of performance and targets, we all know that this entity, since the start, is not performing at all. They are not efficient. They are not performing the task at hand. And I think we need to say this clearly to them. For us, it's not that they came here with a model and presentation that didn't work in the first place, and now they are still struggling with burglaries and everything like that. You can't come here if everything that you are owing or responsible for, if that is not secured. So why are you here if you can't look after the infrastructure? So, yeah. That is my short thing. There's a lot of questions here, but I think the questions, I can leave this, because we're not going to get the answers that we're supposed to get in terms of the performance, taking this entity forward. We want an efficient entity. We want an entity that is run efficiently, and we don't have it here. Thanks, sir.
Another one, please.
Thanks, sir. Most of the questions members have been asked them, but I just want to dwell on issue here, because there is no staff. I mean, let's say if the board entity doesn't have the board members or the staff members that are permanent, you'll have a problem. For example, there is a problem of the funds. You don't have a CFO, and then you can't run the entity without the CFO. So, DG, you must have that department, that entity. I've seen here, in their presentation, they are saying by the end of January 2020, they will connect their remaining sites. Where are they going to get money, because they are still struggling with the money? What is your plan to make sure that we have money or to sustain this entity? Because it seems that you can't sustain yourselves as an entity. And then the other question is, Honorable, I think let me pause there, Honorable Chair. Or what are their plan to overcome the challenge that they are facing, the entity?
Thank you very much. From my side, I think I'm covered by members, but just to check, there was an SIU investigation. What is the progress in line with that? SIU investigation. How are we planning to recover the money if indeed we have? What are our plans to have? This one is for the department. I can't ask them, because the board is their employers. You can't answer for your boss, Mr. Basil Ford. You can't answer for your boss. This one is for the department. What plans do we have to have a permanent board? We can't be in a situation where we don't have a permanent board. Forever not having a permanent board. We are just saying we need to have a dysfunctional entity if we don't have a permanent board. Is there any plans in line with the IC, Centec, broadband infra, or you are doing almost the same thing? Are there any plans from the department to merge these entities just to ensure efficiency and what have you? The targets my colleagues have already highlighted. Your targets are below 50%. And we can't have a situation where you put your own target and say, this is what we're going to achieve, but at the end of the financial year is below 50%, is underperformance. Mr. Ford, is underperformance. You can't put, that target is not put by the department, it's put by you. You say to yourself, this is my target, I want to achieve it by the end of the financial year. But at the end of the financial year, that target is below 50%. It's a serious, serious underperformance. I think one other thing that you will need to do, you might not answer it, if you can answer it now is fine, is just to give us the overall budget, the overall picture of the entity, to say where are we, because I see we have got a lot of acting. It's just a Hollywood. It's a Hollywood. What are
your plans in line with filling the positions? That will require the department and support.
Because we can't run an entity through acting people and expect results. And also the picture of the overall budget and everything. I think you will need to update your presentation, because here I said I come from Limpopo. It still reflects Mutare. Mutare is merged with Tulamela now. Mr. Majzira is merged with Tulamela. You know you come from there. It's merged with Tulamela. So you can't still reflect it as Mutare. It has been merged in 2016. Yeah, long ago. So rather it must just be an area in Tulamela where it is now merged with. It's similar to what Honorable Nana was saying. Can we go and update those things so that whatever you give us is something that is updated? If it is an infrastructure which was in Mutare, it must be looked. It is an infrastructure in this area. Now it is merged with Tulamela municipality, so it must reflect. And the targets there, as we have said, you were planning to do 1,200 and something. How much have you done? Around 40 or so. The target is very, 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 very low. What are the plans of the entity and the department to address that? Thanks. I hand over to you.
And thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. I'll answer some of the questions, and I'll also ask colleagues to also deal with some of the governance issues. So USASA may also come in on the issues that pertains to USASA in terms of the program that they're running. So in terms of the first question that was asked around the broadband program that's run by the department and the constraints that are there in terms of the funding, the question was, you know, if funding was there, how many would have been done? So in one of the slides where we indicate the phase one and phase two, so phase one was it's meant to cover 6,135 facilities. However, you know, Treasury, I think in 2018, 2019, cut budgets of all government departments to address some of the fiscal challenges. And then this project was also affected with those cuts, and we had to reduce the targets that we could do, we were able to achieve with the funding that we have. But as indicated as well, is that we are working on a program for phase two funding, which we're saying that, because Treasury says within the fiscal it might not be possible to get funding, so we need to explore funding from external sources. In order to do that, then there's a requirement to do this feasibility study, which we're saying that we are working with the Development Bank of South Africa, and there's going to be a service provider that's going to assist. So with that, then we'll be able to access more funding in order to scale up the program. And the outcome of that as well is looking at how will we expedite the rollout, because now it has introduced a delay. So how do we also
package it national, provincial, or even at the district level? How do you align it with the presidential district model approach so that we can have multiple projects running in multiple districts at the same time in order to expand the island? So we're hoping that once we conclude the feasibility, we should be able to start the process of getting funding for the program to expand the island. So that's where the issue of the constraints is. Then also, right, ask the question of the monitoring. How we monitor this implementation? So we're addressing two parts. So we do monitoring during the implementation. We have established governance structures. That's led by the department. We have CETA and broadband Infraco, which then these different structures, they look at technical, also project management, and also strategic issues. So the operational structures meet weekly to review the progress and also address any challenges that are coming to, so that we can, either the department can assist in resolving those. So that's how we monitor that, and we get feedback on a weekly basis. And if there are issues that can need to be escalated to the DG and also the CEOs to assist, which are strategic of nature anyway, those we escalate, and we have hotel meeting with the DG and the monthly meeting, which I chair as well, to review the progress. So there's monitoring during the implementation to check the progress and also manage any risks that emerge in a project of this nature. But then there's also monitoring of facilities that have they are operational. So once a facility is connected and it's operational, we go through a process through where CETA include that facility in their network monitoring center, so that they can remotely monitor activity on that facility. So they're able to, even without going to the facility, it can report that a facility is down, and then they either can send technician, and you know, sometimes like the issues that we raised by Sasa, I find that we can see that the facility is down, and we find that someone at the school or the health facility switch it off. But then it sends an alarm. When it's off, it sends an alarm, says this facility is off. So we were able to do that monitoring. We're still going through a process of getting all of them to be monitored, so that we don't have the resources to be visiting each and every facility, and also want to proactively address some of the issues as they arise. So that's how we do the monitoring once the implementation is underway. Then the question of the pilot project and the time frame. So the phase one project, called the pilot project, because it was felt that the project is just too huge, it's built at 1,000 facilities nationally. And however, as much as the pilot project, it's seen as a feeder to the phase two. So all the facilities that are being connected as part of the phase one, they're going to be supported over a 10-year period. So once it's connected, it gets supported over a 10-year period. But however, because of the sustainability of this, because each facility is connected, the framework that it must be supported over a longer period. You don't want to connect for a short period and then in a year's time there's no connectivity. So that's why we're trying to address that through the feasibility. So how do we ensure that it's sustainable and we're able to connect for that? Because once education relies on digital technology for teaching and learning, the uptime and the availability of such is going to be very high as well, and we have to ensure that it is sustainable. So it's a project, but it's a pilot, but it's longer. We made it a pilot because we wanted to see there are lessons that we are learning, which we are feeding into this phase two program. So as we go for phase two, we can take advantage of whatever we have learned, like this issue of security, the issue of how to deal with the community coming together, because it's a good thing to allow the community to use the service, because that's the intention. What you want is that when people go to the clinic, while they are sitting there, they should have access to Wi-Fi, they can do other things, they can also be awareness and all that. But you've got these unintended consequences which goes beyond us. There are also security issues that we need to engage with the security class and how to address this, because some of them are just pure criminal element. Yeah, that's why the models, you know, the trolling, we put in strong rooms. Sometimes people break through the concrete roofs to go. So there's a lot of things that happens from a security point of view. And we don't have that competence and rely on the security cluster. But we welcome this concern, because we really
would like everyone to work through that the community support these programs. Because the issue I think the issue of the board members that the colleagues can deal with in terms of from the governance point of view, and the suggestion that maybe looking at the password, they will take that into consideration to limit the usage. We'll see whether it works. We'll pilot the change of passwords and what does it require from an administrative point of view. We'll feed it back to the technical people. The issue of computer literacy, remember you are right, it is a challenge in some cases. We at some point we partnered with a private sector player to provide training to teachers, because you need the infrastructure, you need the devices, you need people who are literate to be able to use that. You need all those things must be in place. However, you know, the devices, the training of the teachers, it's within the Department of Basic Education. In our initial approach to Treasury, we actually submitted a budget which covered the devices and the training to say that it doesn't make sense that we provide the infrastructure, the devices and the training are not there, because then it limits the maximum impact of that. And we know, because Treasury said that's the mandate of the basic education. We've engaged with them. They've got a program. But the issue is we need to align with them. And the feasibility, in terms of the feasibility, we want to formalize the alignment of this program so that the teacher training that the basic education is having with some of the private places, because they've established teacher training centers, but it's not sufficient. It's not addressing the scale of the number of people that must be trained or that come from this. It's not meeting the demand. So we need to work around it. So it is a valid concern and challenge that we need to continue working with the basic education colleagues. There was a question, I think, Honorable Mudisi, also around the issue of what's the plan to ensure that you've got money to finalize the connectivity by the end of the financial year. So we do have the money, it's just that because some of these, you'll see the selection of these districts, they're very remote, so there was lack of infrastructure. So even for us to get to those areas, you need to build a lot of backhaul infrastructure. So what has been happening, the money there has been, they've been investing on expanding the infrastructure before they do the final connectivity to the facility. So that way it's there. In some, I think 194 of those facilities, now they have the infrastructure. They're just waiting for the services. So we don't account it until the services is activated. So that's why I say we are working hard to get it finalized by the end of the financial year. We do have the money. The project is being implemented. It's just that to do everything, in particular the activation of the service. So even if the infrastructure is connected to the facility of the school, until the service is activated and people are able to use the service, we don't count it yet. So that's where we are. So if each level address the issue of the merging of the entities, that because they are already playing a role. So we're currently using, leveraging on the capacity of our entities, BBI, Inflaco, and also Centec on the rollout of the program. But there's also a program that the department is running, I think maybe Didi Shlembul also elaborated on that, to try to rationalize these entities, to create a state infrastructure entity and a state information technology entity, so that all the state-owned entities that play in the infrastructure side are consolidated under one entity. But as we implement this, we actually try to do that, to say, probably for your strength is in the infrastructure, that focus on infrastructure. See that on the service side, focus on the service side. So before the even formal amalgamation or rationalization of the entities, the way we have configured the program at the moment is aligned with that, to try so that we can improve on the efficiencies and the coordination between these entities. I think I've covered most of them. If there's anything I can come back later, I'll defer to the colleagues to address some of those.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning again to honorable members. I am going to try and deal with the governance issues as have been raised here, but I'm going to first premise that on the work we are doing with regard to evaluating, rationalizing, and merging the entities, because governance then forms but a subset of that. Our portfolio now, as it stands, with I'm talking now DTPS and DOC, which have been the merged entities in terms of the presidential proclamation, has got 10 public entities. It's something we have noted ourselves that it these entities require to be rationalized in one way or the other. And the work is at different stages with respect to these entities. Work is already underway with merging broadband Infraco and Centec. We got a cabinet go ahead to merge those, so we are doing the finalizing the business cases and the legislation to give effect to that. So those two, BBI and Centec, will then create what my colleague here refers to as a state infrastructure company, state ICT infrastructure company, which by and large will then be responsible for all the broadband work relating to SA Connect. The other entity we are looking into, which we also have received cabinet approval to work on, is CETA. We are repurposing CETA to now focus on being a government or a state IT company, not just an IT procurement company, but a fully fledged IT company. So there's a lot of work there also happening, including reviewing the legislation as well as the new business case for the company. With respect to USASA and USAF, again, work is underway to convert what is currently happening under USAF and USASA into a digital development fund. It's essentially going to be a fund that finances these projects, but may not necessarily be involved in the execution. So it will receive proposals, consider proposals, and then fund those proposals with the funding coming from both government and the industry. There is also other work we are doing, looking at even rationalizing the regulatory institutions in the portfolio. Here we're talking ICASA, we have the Film and Publication Board, as well as the .za domain name authority, which has to do with internet. All of them perform regulatory functions in the ICT sector, which is converging almost every day. You know, so there's so much synergy and room for efficiency there. On the skills development side or training, then there is NEMISA currently, which is the National Electronic Media Institute of South Africa, which is also being repurposed to perform a bigger role, because it used to be just focused in the broadcasting sector, but we want them to do training in the total ICT sector. So that is the restructuring work that is currently underway, and it is at different stages for different entities. So given that this work is underway, you know, now I'm coming closer to the entity we have here, USASA. USASA used to have a board whose term came to an end in 2018, and then an interim board was put in place to fast track this restructuring work, and that board's term was ended in end of October last year. And we didn't have the board for a little while until now that the minister has appointed the executive caretaker. So the executive caretaker is going to essentially be there for 12 months, possibly extended for another 12 months, but to ensure that this restructuring work, you know, happens, was also making sure that the current operations are looked after. And this, in our view, will fast-track then the restructuring that we want to take place at USASA. So, Chairperson and honorable members, we no longer have the board now at USASA because we have this executive caretaker, and therefore the board could not be here today.
The issue about the board members who are essentially overstretched, you know, in terms of the number of boards they serve in, is something that we have been seized with over a longer period of time now, to the point that in assisting the minister to make the appointments into boards, we look into that as one of the factors to consider. And in terms of the DPSA guide now on board membership, the guide says somebody to be appointed into an SOE board should not serve in more than three boards, basically, because that person is essentially too stretched, cannot do justice to the job at hand, yet continues to derive financial benefit in the form of fees. So all those things we now look into, and we will continue to look into those things as we make provisions now for the new entities in the new laws that we are coming up with. Thank you very much, Chair.
No, Chair?
Thank you, Chairperson. And firstly, I just want to apologize. I was very nervous. It's my first time to the NCRP, and hence my introduction was probably deficient. It was not sufficient enough, didn't give enough information. And I want to thank the DDG for clarifying my appointment. I just want to assure the honourable members, my appointment is full-time, so I'm completely dedicated full-time to USASA. The department has given me a brief and set my tasks. One of the tasks is to deal with the acting positions. And I agree with the concerns raised by the honourable members that this is not Hollywood, even though I do come from the film industry. But I understand the concerns, and I will do my best to stabilise the entity and to make sure that permanent positions are appointed as quickly as possible. With regards to the overall budget, I must confess that I do not know what it is, but I will find out and report back as necessary. With regard to the SIU investigation, my colleague Sinwani will answer that, and then the rest of the questions which pertain to primarily operational issues will be answered by my other colleague. And I just want to note that, I just also want to say that I note the concerns around performance, and I would like to believe that when we come again next year, that hopefully those same concerns will not be raised again. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, honourable members. With regard to the SIU report, recommendations were made, and I will say almost 90% was implemented and incorporated into our internal policies, because the report picked up deficiencies in as far as our SCM processes are concerned, appointment processes or recruitment processes, and other things. But however, those things were attended to. We have, you know, policies in place. We have updated or enhanced them where they had gaps. However, there were also other recommendations with regard to disciplinary actions to be taken against the then board, the caretaker CEO or the CEO. So that one could not be implemented, because by the time the report was released, they had already left USASA. So yes, and also in terms of maybe where financial, you know, recovery could be made and all that, it needed legal, you know, to go after them and to appoint attorneys. And at that time we had budgetary constraints, as it was already indicated when the presentation was done. So we couldn't really, you know, go after them, and because it was going to cost a lot of money. What was done was that the then board said, okay, come up with analysis on how much we could spend, you know, on recovering the money versus what they had to pay back. So based on that, we could see that with the challenges that we had in terms of finances, you know, that could not be, you know, done. Thanks.
Yeah, before you get out from the floor, the NPA has established a unit that deals with recovery of money, which if you can't do it, why don't you refer to them to deal with that? So that we can't leave that. That is why I couldn't interject on the other ones, but that one I felt you can't pass. You can't pass. There are quite a number of areas where you can put those to be dealt with at that level. I think the Mr. Basil Ford, as the new person in charge, you must see how you can deal with that.
Okay, if I may say something, thanks, Chair. Thanks for raising that. In some instances, that referral was made, so what we need to make maybe is to follow up on how far the process is, because I'm aware that even our legal indicated that they will refer some of the matters to the NPA.
We need that report.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Honorable Nan.
Thanks, Chairman. I needed to check on Mr. Ford's statement about the budget. He said he wasn't aware, he would come back. I wouldn't know whether that included the question I asked regarding litigation and whether is there an issue with budget constraints or is it because they're confident. I just wanted to check,
yes.
Will his response also entail that? Because
no, what I required them, like the other thing that I said they must put on the report.
Yeah.
We can just give them a time frame to go and work out a report that they present back to us, which cover all those items.
Sure.
Are we together, Mr. Ford?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Can I just also ask, I think for the next round, if we can maybe after the meeting get the entity's human capacity report, so that we don't, if they come, we ask them again for maybe that report also. I think that was also important and left up.
They will deal with the issue of the budget and everything, the human capacity and all the items that we raised which were not part of the report. Can you go and work out a report and bring it back to us? Yeah.
Thank you, Chief. We'll note that and we will respond to it appropriately.
Okay. Can we get the time frame for the report? When are you going to bring the report? You liaise with the secretary of the committee in terms of, like, we just need the time frame, department. We don't want to put you on. We want you to give us the time frame. We'll check whether it is just too much or whatever. When can we expect that report?
Chair, in terms of budget, it's fairly quickly because the budget exists. It's just I'm not au fait with it, or
yeah.
I don't have sufficient knowledge of it to comment on the budget. So that should be fairly quick. In terms of the
can we give you 2 weeks? 2 weeks is sufficient.
Chair, if I could appeal to the chair to give me a little bit more time, and I'll tell you the reason why.
Okay.
I need to assess the structure, not just in terms of who is where, but I also need to assess the structure in terms of what the structure should look like in terms of what we have to do.
Okay.
And that is an exercise which will take a slightly longer time. Okay. And I would rather come back to the committee with a structure that makes sense, not one that exists, because you will see acting.
Alright. You just said sufficient time. I'm looking at sufficient. How sufficient can sufficient be? I'm looking at sufficient. I said, how sufficient can sufficient be? Yeah.
Can I commit to the first week in March?
Okay. Yeah. Or let me rescue you. We can allow them to finish this quarter. In the next quarter, you bring us that report.
Thank you, Chair.
We'll just invite you to come back.
Thank you, Chair.
But you must bring the report first. I see you are just putting yourself under pressure, which you might not succeed. Okay, thank you very much. Is there any additions, Ms. Zila?
Yes, Chair. In terms of there are certain other operational questions which my colleague Lave will address. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The first issue was on the training for the teachers. For OR Tambo, we partnered with NEMISA to provide that training to the clinics, people that use the services, and also in the schools we also partnered with NEMISA to make sure that the teachers, you know, the officials are well trained, and that you know the equipment that is provided is not just sitting there, but it is being used. And going forward, we also extending that to other areas where we're rolling out our services to make sure that people are trained and they are able to use these facilities. Maybe just to touch on the issue of security, and we admit that we have had issues with security. And from those issues that we've, you know, had to deal with, we learned some lessons, and currently we are working on a new model to make sure that we do take, you know, those issues into account, and we make sure that our end-use devices we're providing, that they are secure. There's a lot of technologies that are out there that we can sort of implement, and you know the fact that we've implemented over these years sort of put us in a better position to be able to respond appropriately, and we are looking into that, and the next deployment we will make sure that there is also security. We've already looked into that, and we will make sure that we deploy with security. And so, I think in terms of the operational issues, the other question was on government facilities. Because we talk about schools and clinics, so government facilities, we're referring to police stations, libraries, home affairs, so you do find those offices and we do connect them. So I just wanted to clarify that, to say we're not referring to schools, but other facilities that we connect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Whatever is left out must be covered in the report that you will submit. I think when I look at my members, they are fine with the presentation. Let me take this opportunity to thank you, Mr. Mboveni, and your team for availing yourself. You have had areas where we have got concerns with the report. Go and work out those areas. Look at the report before they present it back to us, whether it covers what we want in terms of our oversight responsibility to them. Make sure that it covers the concerns that have been raised by honorable members, and then we'll get that report. We want to thank you very much. You are released, and you must move out quietly because we still have got some other house issues that we are dealing with, honorable members.